A lot of us, mostly the older among us, reacted the same way when the news came this week from the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News that they were both going to stop printing and delivering a daily paper. They're still producing news content, of course, but people took to social media to lament the turn of events or to reminisce about the good old days. Salt Lake Mayor Erin Mendenhall's tweet said she'll miss the papers dearly. And Aaron Bloodworth sent one. He was thinking about his paper route in Sugar House when he was a kid.
In the mornings, we'd get up and you'd look outside, see if the papers were there, load them in your carrier bag and start walking. I could wing a paper pretty good long distance and hit it with accuracy. And our goal, of course, was to get it out of the weather onto the porch. And I rarely had to step off of the sidewalk to deliver all the papers on a Saturday morning. I mostly remember the old men, guys you dream about having as advisors in life. I'd get their experiences, their stories. You know, some of them were big advice givers. Others were just talking about current affairs. And those evolved into relationships. I'd start to realize that these guys are going to be asking me about what's happening in the news. So I'd scan the paper, you know, the front page of every section, get myself enough familiar with those headlines that I could be conversational when I went around and ran into all my old advisors, old buddies. I think I gained a lot of experience there that prepared me for other aspects of life.
Good morning, Aaron.
It did develop kind of a lifelong appreciation for being informed. And I think that all came from back then when it was part of my daily routine to capture part of what was going on in the world around me. From that day forward, I don't recall ever being disconnected from the news. It makes complete sense where the Tribune and where the Deseret News have gone, but there's an aspect of it, probably for those like me who were deeply connected to it at one point, that feels like a hollowing out or a loss of something that was once close. But the world changes, and that's where we're at today.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Yeah, the world changes. And newspapers that haven't been able to adapt have been folding all over the country in the last 15 years or so. The Associated Press found that about 1,400 cities in the U.S. have lost a newspaper. None of them as big as Salt Lake, by the way. And again, we aren't losing the newsrooms of the Trib or the Des, just the daily tangible broadsheet made of wood pulp. In separate announcements, they said they will end their joint operating agreement, where they shared advertising and printing, which means those massive presses are being mothballed and the 160 people who kept them running are out of jobs. The papers are both producing a weekly printed version. The Deseret News will also do a monthly magazine. The Tribune is working on a newsletter. That's in addition to the daily coverage they'll keep offering on their websites. So what is actually changing with this news, and what will it mean? Joining us first on the program is Matthew LaPlante, a journalist, an author, a blogger, and a professor of journalism at Utah State University. We should also mention that he's a former national security correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune. Were you surprised at this news, or did you see it coming?
Oh, I saw it coming. Anybody who was paying attention should have seen it coming. This is a long time coming, I think.
So we'll get into the details in a moment, but did it make you a little sad to see the printed paper go? I mean, we'll talk about whether or not journalism is over now and all of those kinds of things, but did it make you feel a little wistful, a little sad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really sad for me. And it's a weird kind of sad because, if I'm being honest, I don't pick up a paper copy of the paper, of either paper, very often anymore. Hardly at all. But I've been published in both papers. I spent years as the Tribune's national security reporter, and I've freelanced stories for the Deseret News from El Salvador and Vietnam and Ethiopia. They've been like really, really generous to me over the years. And so I knew this day was coming, but honestly I am sad. But also it's the right move for both newspapers.
I want to ask you to explain a little bit about that. But let's back up for a minute first. Yeah. For those unaware of this sometimes sort of complicated joint operating agreement that has tethered these papers together for nearly 70 years now, give us a quick sense. How does this work? How has it worked?
Okay, so JOAs are weird because JOAs –
and that's
really
what
should,
and that's what joint operating agreement is,
right,
JOA.
Right, yeah.
You'll hear it throughout this program is the JOA. Yes, okay.
Yeah. And they really shouldn't exist under federal law because we have antitrust laws that under normal circumstances would prevent two newspapers that are owned by separate owners, right, separate businesses in the same market conspiring together to, like, for instance, set advertising rates or decide on circulation routes, right? That's an anti-competitive thing if they're collaborating, conspiring that way. You know, it makes sense that we have antitrust laws because we're trying to maintain competition, and competition is a really good thing in the market of ideas. But newspapers, when they're in the same market, they're not just competing for advertising dollars. They're not just competing for sales. They're competing for scoops too.
Yeah.
And trying to maintain a world where, and this has happened over the last century many, many times, where circulation drops for both papers. Advertising and subscriptions drop for both papers for whatever reason. It's happened for various reasons over time. Which is, by the way, why we have a bunch of newspapers with hyphenated names, because one contracted, it was bought out by the other, and then two voices become one. And that's not good for the market of ideas. So some papers hatched this plan. And the plan was, let's go to the feds and let's say, hey, is it okay if we share the advertising and circulation part of this, but we stay competitive and we don't collaborate in the journalistic part? And over the years, in 1970, Richard Nixon signed a law that said, yeah, okay, that's fine. You can do that. And that's what JOAs do. They allow two newspapers in the same market to share printing and sales and delivery, all that stuff.
So was it for news consumers, was it a good thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a good thing. Actually, I for Salt Lake City, it was a really good thing. I really believe that there are really only two reasons why Salt Lake City, which is a relatively small capital city in a sparsely populated state, can have two daily newspapers. And one is the joint operating agreement. And the other is the fact that one of the newspapers is, you know, depending on how you look at it, it's either a piece of propaganda or a gift to the people of Utah. And I actually believe it's the latter. I think the Deseret News is a good paper that I don't turn to for news about the church, but which I can totally rely on for news about sports and crime and art and food, civic events, all that stuff. This city does not have two daily newspapers for so long, but for the fact that they were sharing the costs of circulation delivery and for the largesse of the church. So, yeah, I do think it was a good thing for most of the time that it existed.
So what does it say? What does it mean now that they're deciding to ditch it? Does it signal that it stopped working? It stopped being functional. It didn't work financially anymore.
Yeah. And that's not unique to Salt Lake City.
Right.
Even though the relationship between the Deseret News and the Salt Lake Tribune is, I would say, quite unique among all of the joint operating papers. There's never been more strange bedfellows in a joint operating agreement, as far as I can tell. But we had dozens of these sorts of agreements over the years. And now we're down to four. And at the end of this year, after the Tribune and Deseret News go their separate ways, it'll be down to three. And part of that is just because of the market forces that are playing and the technological forces that are playing on newspapers. Even when you share costs now, it is hard to keep a newspaper afloat. You know, and so that's why the Deseret News and the Salt Lake Tribune are not just going their separate ways, but also taking this completely new direction for them, completely new direction into, you know, far, far fewer print products.
Yeah. So I guess here's a question. Is it a good thing now that the Tribune is going to be out from under this joint operating agreement? But before we sort of get to that question, it seems like we have to go through – I don't want to go through a long history here, but do bring us up to speed. Tell us how the fortunes of the Tribune and the Deseret News have changed over the last 10 years or so. As newspapers, okay, of course, have gone under in something like 1,400 cities in the United States over the last 10 years or something like that. Just give us a sort of thumbnail sketch of how the fortunes of these papers have been changing.
Well, okay, so first we got to say, like, these are two really, really strange bedfellows, right? Yeah. Like, the Tribune was, for a long time in its history, like, this really unabashedly anti-church paper.
Right.
And it still has the words Utah's Independent Voice on its masthead, which,
yeah,
like, let's face it, not exactly a veiled reference to the fact that it isn't the Deseret News.
But that is part of its appeal. Let's be honest. A lot of people see the Tribune,
whether they're
Mormon or not, they foresee that as some kind of independent sensibility, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the Tribune has long, I mean, when it does readership surveys, it has long noted that it has lots and lots of Latter-day Saint readers,
yeah,
who also don't want their news from the church, even from what I contend is a very respectable product. But in any case, it's the relationship, especially over the past 20 years, has been really troubled, in large part because not because of the differences in, you know, perspective or the fact that these are strange bedfellows, but by the fact that the Tribune has been owned by something like six different entities over the past 20 years.
Yeah.
And
I loved how you put it to us earlier. You said it was sold to a corporation, which sold to a corporation, which sold to a corporation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that seems to be how it sort of has played out.
Right. And some of those corporations have been interested in keeping two papers afloat in Salt Lake City as part of this partnership. And some of those entities have been interested in selling off the newspaper's assets, the Salt Lake Tribune's assets.
Yeah.
And Dean Singleton, when he owned the newspaper, sold off the old Tribune building.
Mm-hmm.
Alden Global Capital, when it owned the newspaper, it sold off the Tribune's ownership share of a printing press. And it even sold future profit sharing percentages for cash to the Deseret News.
Right.
So the relationship that was intended to keep two papers afloat only works if the owner of both papers actually wants to keep their product afloat. If they don't care about the long term, it really doesn't matter. And the Tribune has had a series of owners that have sometimes cared about the long term and sometimes have not.
So to the question, is it a good thing that the Tribune now is out from under this joint operating agreement? Will it be able to flourish maybe even in a more independent way because it's not connected to the Deseret News even in that way?
Yeah, I wish it had done it 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I've argued for a long time. Way back when I was a Tribune reporter, I was in the office of then editor Nancy Conway, and I said, "Hey, look, why are we doing it in this way? Why are we cutting down trees? I mean, like, this is like let's just make an ecological argument, right? Like,
right,
we cut down trees, we pulp them into paper, we dip them into ink, and then we throw them onto a truck that like belch out carbon along the way as they go. This is not great stewardship of our environment, but also, even when you share costs, all that stuff is expensive. It costs more money to print and deliver a paper than you're making from selling advertising on a printed and delivered paper. And if that's the case, and increasingly that became the case over the years, it's time to find a new way to do things.
Mm.
You know, the thing is, too, like, the cost of making a printed paper aren't only in the trucks and in the newspaper boxes and the printing press and the cost of pulp. It's also in the newsroom. There's a meeting that happens every day at the Salt Lake Tribune with the highest paid employees in the newsroom where they try to figure out where things go on the front page.
Yeah.
And so we're spending a lot of time maintaining this traditional product at a time when readers are voting with their eyeballs and circulation has fallen and fallen and fallen. A lot of people love newspapers. I had a student a couple of weeks ago. He got his very first opinion piece published in the Tribune. And he called me. He's like, "How do I get a paper copy of the Tribune?"
Yeah.
He really wanted one, right? He wanted a paper copy. People still really are endeared to a paper newspaper. But the economics just make less and less sense. So yeah, I think it's a good thing.
So a lot of us are, as you said, reminiscing about having a paper to spread out in the morning, you know, with your coffee or whatever other ritual goes along with this printed thing. But but in the larger picture, it seems like you're saying it doesn't really matter that it's an actual piece of paper, right? I mean, like, that doesn't matter, or does it? Because there is this question that's coming up now that, okay, you've got the digital, you know, copy of a newspaper, but is that the same thing as in print, where you get, for example, the stories, only the stories in the digital copy of the paper are getting hits, and so that changes the way stories trend and are accessed, and whether the less sensational but possibly important stories are going to be diminished. Like, does it matter that it's a printed thing that you can thumb through and work your way through, and that it's or that it's a digital thing that is driven in some cases by hits, by the trending stories? Does that make sense? Oh,
yeah, no, it totally makes sense, and you're right on. I mean, the medium is the message, right?
Yeah.
The way we consume information affects the way we think about information. It affects the information that we get and don't get. So, yes, absolutely. People who pick up a paper copy of the Tribune have a different news experience to people who read the Tribune online. Same as every newspaper,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I read the New York Times every morning online. It is a completely different experience, right? And it's not a seance. The pageantry isn't there. The smell isn't there. It's not the same experience. Not just in that sort of romantic way, but also in a very sort of like intellectual way. You are getting a different kind of the news. I don't think you're getting a bad kind of the news, but it is different.
So if the question isn't necessarily how people are reading the paper, is it whether they're reading the Tribune itself, you know, however they get it? I mean, the paper has said its online audience is growing, and that trend is accelerating. So are people still reading the Tribune? Are people still reading local news?
Absolutely. The Salt Lake Tribune at its height, at its zenith, had reportedly about 200,000 subscribers. Right. I think that was inflated a bit, but let's go with that. That's for an entire newspaper once a day.
Yeah.
And now a good Tribune story gets hundreds of thousands of clicks. It's just one story, not the entire newspaper, one story. So, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune now has a subscribership of about 30,000 people getting the print paper for the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, including people all around the world, not just who can get the paper delivered to their home, can access the paper, can find their way to it through social media. So I think the appetite for local news is as strong as it has ever been. It's probably stronger than it's ever been, but it is different.
Yeah.
And part of that difference is also that the Salt Lake Tribune is not the only place to get local news, right? Like, and, you know, I've said this for a long time too, right? We have shifted into a world where professional journalists share responsibility with citizen journalists, most of whom don't even consider themselves citizen journalists, for sharing community news. And we are not great at that sharing yet. And as citizens, we have not really figured this out in terms of like what our civic responsibility is for being journalists. But that transition is underway. It's going to be decades more before we figure it out. By that time, we'll be on to something else.
Well, so here's the question then, though, will they pay for it? Because this has been kind of the eternal question for years now, since the, you know, digital age really took over. Will news consumers, who are now accustomed to getting their information for free on this vast platform, the internet, will they want to pay for local news? Will they pay for it?
Yeah, I think they will. And the proof is public radio. You know, radio was free for a very, very long time. And then somebody came along and decided they were going to open a public radio station and they were going to, you know, stop broadcasting stories and content every few months and beg for money. And it worked, And we have public radio stations all across the United States now.
Yeah.
People want to give. And the Salt Lake Tribune is showing this is a model that can work for even for a legacy newspaper. And it's not it is unique in that it is a legacy newspaper that is converted to a nonprofit and now sells subscriptions, but also asks for donations and goes out looking for grants and all of that stuff. But there are other papers popping up all across the country that are not just trying this, but have been successful in doing this for years now. The Texas Tribune, there's one in San Diego. There's one in Minnesota. This model is not going to work everywhere, but it's going to work. Will it sustain a newsroom of 65 people? I don't know. But it will sustain a news operation.
Matthew LaPlante, he's a professor of journalism at Utah State University. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER's Community Calendar keeps you connected with what's happening where you live. It's an online resource featuring hundreds of family-friendly activities and vital community services. Many of them are virtual, so you can enjoy them safely from home during the pandemic. If you do attend an in-person event, KUER encourages you to take safety precautions like wearing a mask. You can view events and share your own at KUER.org/calendar.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. This week, Utah's two leading newspapers, the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News, announced an historic change. It includes the end of daily paper delivery and the breakup of their decades-long print collaboration. This has been a long time coming. Subscription rates and ad revenue have been dropping for years, and both papers say the changes will align their operations with where news consumers and the money are going. So we're going to be talking about this story, trying to get a sense of what impact it could have on readers and the communities where they live. Now, we were hoping to hear from representatives from both papers. The Deseret News, though, they turned us down. They told us we could find all the relevant information in the press release and the fact sheet they sent. So let's hear from the Salt Lake Tribune instead. David Noyce is the interim director for the paper. Tim Fitzpatrick is the newspaper's executive vice president. And I asked them to take us through this decision to end this joint operating agreement. Noyce went first.
We all knew that there was a deadline coming on this operating agreement. And, of course, the Tribune now is a nonprofit. So our board, it's up to our board to kind of decide what they want to do from there. Print for both papers has been losing money. Virtually all of our readers are digital. Or not virtually all, a huge chunk, and it continues to gain ground. So it came down to the decision of whether to continue an operating agreement, which both papers continue to lose money producing a print product, trying to go a different direction and kind of break ties and just save as much money as we could so that we could deliver the journalism we want to deliver.
Is it a financial decision more than anything?
I think that would be fair to say, don't you, Tim?
Well, I think it's going where the audience is. It isn't. It's just becoming too hard to prop up print, for lack of a better word. It is about under 20% of our Utah readers now are print readers. The vast majority are online, where we can deliver news more efficiently. It's also, I mean, the big trend here, thing that brought us to this point and brought all the newspapers to this point, is the change in advertising. That if you go back 20 years ago, advertising was 80% of our revenue, and selling the newspaper was 20% of our revenue. Where we are now is that we make more money off of selling the newspaper than we do off of the advertising. That's how far advertising has fallen. Advertisers have many more ways to get to their readers. This is where we've lost our monopoly, if you will. So it's really advertising as much as anything that has driven this. And this is just the changing advertising market for everybody.
What does it mean now that you're untethered officially, or will be untethered officially, from the Deseret News? What changes? Like, does it free you up editorially in any way?
No, we were free before. You have to remember that the arrangement we had with the Deseret News was only print. So again, as we have built up our separately, we both build up our digital assets. Much of this change, much of this separation had already happened. So this last step, frankly, is not that big of a leap, although it is for certain print readers.
Yeah. I mean,
and Doug, I think it's important to note also that, you know, like Tim said, it was print, of course, and we're talking about advertising, distribution, you know, delivery. Our editorial operation, our news operations, our opinion voices have always been completely separate. However, I've been here for more than 30 years working at the Tribune. There's confusion over the joint operating agreement among many readers who believe that the Deseret and the Tribune are the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think the joint operating agreement sometimes kind of fed that. So in some respects, a clean, clear break may be advantageous in the long run.
But there were always those questions. I don't know whether they've been substantiated about whether the Deseret News may have been holding back the progress of the Tribune under the conditions of the various ownership changes. Like, did the Deseret News limit who could have bought the paper? Did it ever try and mute your coverage of the church itself? Can you speak to any of that?
We certainly have covered the church, and we certainly get feedback from the church, but we've never been prevented from pursuing, under any of our owners, from pursuing the stories we wanted to pursue.
That's true. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess the question was whether or not under some of the conditions imposed by some of the ownership changes that the Deseret News somehow had some hold over the Tribune in some way, like who could buy the Tribune, those kinds of things. You're saying there's not much to that. There's nothing to that.
Well, it was a complicated deal.
Yes, it was.
There isn't necessarily there wasn't a big market for the Tribune, frankly. You have to remember at this point, it wasn't making money. It took somebody like Mr. Huntsman, mm-hmm. who was interested in it as a community asset more than as a source of revenue.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the possible owners, there aren't many people that fall into that category, frankly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he knew it at the time, but when he bought it, we were headed to nonprofit. And that's because of what his priorities were. And it wasn't, it wasn't profit. It was serving the community. And, he bought it in 2016, and the years in between just made that more apparent.
How has the enterprise, this idea of nonprofit status, how has that been working so far for you?
It has been a tumultuous year and that is really just sort of a smaller factor. We had to change from a for-profit for 149 years to a nonprofit, but it happened right in the middle of the end of print, the pandemic, the everything else that has gone on this year. That has it's done two things. It's made this transition harder, but it's also absolutely shown our worth in the community. Mm-hmm. We have our users are up, our attention is up. We have never felt more needed by the community in this time of when information, good information, quality information, is so important. So it's sort of like the nuts and bolts have been hard to keep up with, but the reason for doing it has never been stronger.
You say you have no plans to reduce the newsroom staff, although you do mention some employees are going to be redeployed. What does redeployed mean?
We're still examining that, Doug. We know that many of our print production people, which has already been drastically reduced just because, as everyone has noticed, the sizes of our papers have shrunk over the last several years, doing away with some sections on some days entirely. So we've already reduced a lot of our production people, which we put into that bailiwick. Mm-hmm. But they also have responsibilities on our, all around the clock web presence. So, and on weekends. So some of those people we'll use now to deploy on bolstering our website, maybe freeing up more reporters. We want to use all the employees we can and what the talents and traits that they bring to our digital broad focus. And of course, we will still be putting out a print product.
Yeah.
This weekly, we'll take muscle to be able to get it out in people's mailboxes.
Yeah, I want to get to that here in a second. Does this mean, and maybe this is too early to say, but does it mean that you feel financially stable enough to say that the current staff is going to stay in place for the time being? Or do you still have to wait and see how this plays out once the JOA has been ended?
I think we will have to wait and see a bit to see how many of our print subscribers, first of all, retain and want the weekly edition. We've penciled in numbers, but we've got to wait and see how many people are willing to stick with us on print. We expect print to go from where we have it's been draining money to where we'll actually be making money off print, just off that weekly. So a lot will hinge on how many people subscribe. And, of course, that our digital audience continues to grow. We also are expecting to get a new permanent editor within the next couple of months.
You'll be relieved to hear that news, I guess, David, right?
Yes, I will completely. I took myself out of the running from the get-go on that, Doug. I'll be eager to return to what I was doing if possible.
Yeah.
But the new editor will probably have a lot to say about how we deploy our resources.
Right, of course, yeah. So no more stop the presses romanticism, no more old school paper boys or girls, no more spreading the paper out on the kitchen table necessarily. And so set aside the journalism part, what happens to the ritual of the experience? Or is that just long gone for most people anyway, do you think?
Well, you know, I actually got to say stop the press once.
Did you?
I actually did. I've been at the Tribune. This is my 36th year. And we used to have a print run that would start around midnight, and the presses were older then, and they would run for 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a government shutdown in place, and I actually, what we call chase in a new version of a story at about 1 or 1:30 in the morning, and got to tell them to stop the press. Used to go just downstairs and say, hey, stop, we've got a new story coming. And we still hit most of our readers the next morning. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's really painful to see the daily print product go away. And I do know there are so many readers, and many of them older readers, probably like me and older, who have a real devotion to that. It's a ritual. This is a historic moment, a sad historic moment, one none of us really wanted. So I think there is a loss there. There's no question there's a loss. I hope that the weekly print product will help, you know, sate some of that loss, but also that people will increasingly turn to our digital so that they can stay up to speed on everything that's going on in our world.
Tim, this has been in your blood for a while. Are you feeling that tinge of sadness also?
You know, it's interesting. My grandfather and LDS Church president, David O. McKay, got together in 1952 and formed the JOA. Yeah. And it's been around for 68 years. And yes, my father worked at the Tribune. I have ink in my blood. But I'll tell you, I have spent the last 15 or so years focused on digital, on getting us to a new environment, to getting us to 24-hour publishing, and watching us, you know, win a Pulitzer in that world. So as I told other people, in 2005, I said we had 10 more years of print. I was off by 5 years. Yeah. It lasted longer than I thought it would, but I'd been expecting this for a long time. Now, we have a couple of months here where we have some work to do with regard to preserving people's morning ritual, that we're not going to give them the hard copy, but we still can meet them where they want in terms of whether that's a morning newsletter, whether that is what they call an e-edition that looks like a paper. We're trying to figure out exactly what that is, but we do understand the morning ritual. And there, you know, one of the things about the paper is that it's finite, that if you jump into the web, our site, anybody else's site, you can't read it all. And to some people, that's a frustration.
Yeah.
They want they want a chunk, the most important, you know, which is what we do. And then they want to move on with their lives. So we want to still preserve that ritual that this is progress. I can get sentimental, but in general, this is progress.
So give me a sense of what this set aside the newsletter or whatever it is you're developing for the morning ritual. Set that aside for a second here and tell me what the printed version of the paper that people will encounter on Friday is going to, I guess it's Friday. Is it Friday?
Well, it's probably Saturday.
Saturday, sorry.
Delivered
sorry.
In the mail on Saturday.
Okay, so when it comes on Saturday, like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? It's not, like, what is it? What is it?
That's still something we're trying to get our hands around, too. We do expect it to be a broadsheet. So it will look like the Tribune. It will have the Tribune masthead on it. And it will have the best of our enterprise work. For sports, for instance, think of a model like Sports Illustrated. You know, when you buy Sports Illustrated, you don't get who won the game last night. You know, you get deeper enterprise work. That's what the coverage will have to be by necessity, because it's going to be produced and then delivered. So some items might be dated. So you don't want that. You want to produce your best work that's going to last. That's going to have some meaning. We want it to still feel like the Tribune. To still feel like I'm reading my old Tribune that I've grown to trust and love, but that it will have obviously new elements. And now that our staff can be involved in helping with some ideas on that and how we want to move forward, we're looking forward to these next 2 months being a very busy time, not only covering the news with an election next week and everything else that's happening, but also invigorating this weekend edition.
So we were talking with Matthew LaPlante earlier, and he was mentioning, I was asking him about this experience that a lot of us have when we're reading the paper that's paper. You know, like you're thumbing through it. You're looking on the, you know, B2, what's in C4? And you just, and sometimes you encounter a story that might not be at the top, but it's important. And I'm wondering, what is it that determines the stories that people are going to see online? I mean, how much of that is driven by the clicks you're getting on those stories? How much is an editorial decision? And how does, you know, reading the paper online, which is clearly the future, how does that change the way people encounter the news?
When you thumb through the paper, professional journalists are sort of ordering the news for you, you know, helping you understand this is on the front page for a reason. This has the biggest headline for a reason.
Right.
But as you thumb through the paper, the beauty of the paper, it's a kind of potpourri of all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. And you might find a story that's only like 3 or 4 inches that's buried inside the paper. But you're going to find fascinating. And for you, might have been something you wanted to know about when you're on the first page, or at least a story that catches your interest that you wouldn't expect that it would. That can be a little harder to see online. That can be difficult. We obviously study analytics throughout the day, but we do try to keep our news site in fluctuating, you know, in motion, and so that people can kind of see the latest stories that are coming in. But of course, it's not going to be there forever for you like it is with the paper, where you can just look and see later in the evening. It might be off the homepage by then. So that is difficult. That's one of the reasons why we're examining our e-edition, which we put out every day. It's just essentially a digital replica of the paper, which we have thousands of people who look at that every day, and we're still trying to see how we can continue to deliver that. Hmm. I myself like it that way. Yeah. I have a great newspaper delivery person. My paper's out here by 2 or 3 in the morning sometimes because our press runs so short now, Doug.
Yeah.
It doesn't take long to get it out there.
Right.
But I still like to look at the digital replica.
Yeah.
So, Doug, what you're talking about is what we call discovery.
Yeah.
You want to always, no matter what they came for, you want them to stumble upon something else. And it is a different animal in the web. I mean, one of the things that it's important to remember is that on the web, most people come to us not through the homepage. They're coming through us through search. They're coming through social. Hmm. And the first page they hit on our site is an article page for a specific article. It's not the homepage.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So what we need to do and what we do and other places do this too, is offer them something else while they're there. And that's where you get the column down the side that has other stories, and we will improve on that and continue on that. Once you've got them, you want to hang on to them, essentially. And that's where you can get that "I didn't know I was interested in this" moment that happens in print too. And then it also goes back to this package of whatever it is that people want to be able to get to the beginning and the end of. And if you give them that tight package, then they will find those smaller stories at the end, just like they flip to the last page of the paper.
So it doesn't really sound like you're all that worried about whether people are reading the Tribune. It sounds like they are. You mentioned how the online audience is growing. So what are you worried about right now? What are you waiting to see to determine if this will work?
How many people buy it?
Yeah. That's it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's really our intent is to offer this up in single copy sales where we can. We want to see if we can grow it, but there is a reality that we're up against, and that's that, you know, even weekly magazines don't grow their print circulation nowadays. And so it is trying to meet that print audience at a point that makes sense for them and for us, and continuing to do that as long as it makes sense.
Well, here's the big important question. How many cartoons is Pat Bagley going to draw a week now?
About 20 or 30, I tell you.
Yeah.
He'll still be doing his daily cartoon, but we'll want something special, you know, for Sunday. Same with our columnists. We're still working through some of those things. I know Pat, he'll still be there. He'll still be a mainstay, as were our columnists. And I think people will enjoy those things. We'll still have what we call the furniture, comics, games, puzzles, obituaries, furniture, called that for a reason, because you're comfortable in furniture. You know, it makes it feel like home. And I'm hoping that the weekly will still do that, but have new elements that make it exciting.
It's David Noyce. He's the interim editor for the Salt Lake Tribune, along with Tim Fitzpatrick, who's the newspaper's executive vice president. We'll have some final thoughts when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER connects you to your community and brings you the facts about what's happening across our state. As part of our service-driven mission, we value your input. What issues should our reporters be covering where you live? Whose stories should we be telling? Do you have a question about a program or a story you heard on the station? By answering a few short questions, you can help us improve our statewide service. Consider leaving your feedback at KUER.org/feedback.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We're talking about the news this week about the changes happening at both of Utah's largest newspapers. The Salt Lake Tribune and Deseret News made separate announcements this week that they're ending the daily paper delivery and they're shutting down the printing presses. Back now to Matthew LaPlante. He is a professor of journalism at Utah State University. I want to ask you about the Deseret News, which has been experimenting for years now, you know, creating a product that is more targeted to LDS members, for example, and a lot of people outside of Utah. The paper has said recently that, you know, the vast majority, something like 70% of those who actually read the paper online, 70% comes from outside of Utah. But those people aren't looking for news. I mean, it sounds like they're looking for information about the church, maybe, although you, as you said, you don't look for information from the Deseret News about the church. You're looking for sports and other stuff. So I guess the question is the Tribune going to have to specialize? Will that change in some way? Do you think the dynamic, the focus of the paper might have to change over time?
Yeah, and I think those conversations are underway. I love the Tribune's sports coverage. I really appreciate the Tribune's arts and entertainment coverage. I'm a big soccer fan, but I don't get all of my news about the Utah Royals and Real Salt Lake from the Tribune. There are a lot of places, non-professional journalistic entities that are providing really good reporting on those sports teams right now. And I love Sean Means. I don't always agree with Sean Means, the movie reviewer and arts critic at the Salt Lake Tribune, but I love reading Sean. If only to argue with Sean. But Sean is not the only place in Utah that I can go, or like in the world that I can go for a movie review, right? Like, so I don't want to see that go away right away, if at all. But the Tribune, as it makes decisions about its future, is going to have to ask the question, what do we do uniquely that no one else does? And that will get subscribers and donors to keep us afloat. And so I think specialization is in order. And what the Tribune specializes in is being an independent voice. It's what they say on their masthead. And
so they're going to have to really lean into that more.
I hope they lean into that. I encourage the Tribune to lean into that, because that is the thing that will keep me subscribing and donating. And I think it will keep, in the long term, will keep a lot of people subscribing and donating, because that is the thing that would be lost, really, really lost. You know, like the sports pages, if they go away, we can still read about the Jazz and Real Salt Lake and the Utah Royals. The arts and entertainment coverage happens in other places. The political coverage and the independent coverage of the church is not replicated anywhere else right now. And I think that's the Tribune's bread and butter.
Can we say something about the 160 people who are going to be without jobs because those printing presses are now being mothballed? I mean, that's a lot of jobs. That's almost the saddest part of the story in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hate for people to think that even though I say that, like, this is the right thing for the Tribune, that I would in any way imply that it's good, that especially right, oh my God, right now, losing a job right now in this economy, in this pandemic, is awful. And so that is a really sad part of this, because those people have kept this paper coming off the line. Some of them have been there for decades, you know, working the printing press.
Yeah.
And so it is sad. And, you know, one of the most, I'll never forget this day. My friend Matt Canham and I, Canham's now the senior managing editor at the Salt Lake Tribune. Yeah. But we were both fairly new reporters at the Salt Lake Tribune. And one day after the front page meeting, we found out that we owned the entire front page. We'd written together all of the stories on the Tribune's front page. And we went to the press that evening. And the press guys took us around and they let us, you know, watch the paper roll off. And when, you know, we picked up our copies off the line, and they were literally hot off the presses. And those guys were so happy for us. You know, like they were so proud that we had come to, like, that the printing process, it wasn't enough for us to just like pick our paper up off our doorstep the next day, that we wanted to be there seeing it printed, because that was their part of it. And they gave us the printing plates. I've still got mine in my office. I talked to Canham the other day. He still got his too. You know, those people have been an incredibly important part of this process. And you can only wish them the best.
What do you think is going to happen to local news? You sound pretty hopeful about it. But there's a New York Times report out this week about this secretive conservative pay-to-play network of, like, you know, 1,300 websites and newspapers. It's being used basically by Republicans and conservative operatives to create these stories that, you know, they're basically pushing talking points in this one-sided coverage for conservative issues. And I wonder if you worry about this kind of thing really filling a void here.
I worry, but I also worry in context, and that context is a historical context. Newspapers have not always done a great job of representing the communities that they report in. I've worked for very, very small community newspapers, and I've worked for larger papers, and I've had things run in larger papers. And in no case have I ever thought that that paper was any of those papers have done an adequate job of covering their communities. Ownership has always mattered. Ownership priorities have always mattered. The race and sex and gender of the people who are in the newsroom have always mattered. and have always been problematic. So when we talk about like a golden age in journalism, right, that was an age like most people think, oh, yeah, Watergate, right? Like well, back then, you know, the news was the news. And people tell me all the time, oh, for the days of Cronkite.
Yeah.
Like Cronkite was a white man delivering the stories of white men to white viewers because it did not matter to his network whether or not everybody in this country were represented. And the Washington Post, on the day the first Watergate scandal story broke, had 10 stories on its front page and something like 100 sources in those stories, and 90-something percent of them were white men. That's I'm not terribly troubled that we are going to lose local news that also did that same thing. I'm really not worried about that part of it. I'm worried about losing local news, but I'm not worried about this transition because we're not transitioning from some like nirvana where local news was always great and it always did what it was supposed to do. We have failed in so many ways over the years. And this is a chance. This shakeup is a chance for us to get things more right. Not to get things right. We're never going to get things right, but to get things more right. And part of that is representation.
Matthew LaPlante, he's a professor of journalism at Utah State University. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter, at Radio West. Our intern is Ivana Martinez, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.